86 is very specifically looking at one type or one class of innovation, which is software development. So that's a little bit specific. If you look at the regime that those three standards are looking at, so IAS 38 and SFAS 86 are both allow capitalizations, require capitalizations, and the other one just expense them. So we separate them into capitalization regime and expense regimes. So the IAS 38 also distinguished as research and development. Research are expense and development, there's a requirement that it should be capitalized when feasibility, technical feasibility and economic future economic value can be considered, or probable future economic benefit. But when we look at the SFAS 86, it's mainly just about software development. So it does not distinguish research and development. So we look at the next one, which is the criteria for capitalizations. So both standards are looking at technical feasibility and probable future economic benefits. So they need to establish those before it requires to be capitalized. Now, one thing that's actually interesting is that if we look at 86, it actually gave out quite detailed, not detailed, but relatively more information about how to define technical feasibilities for software development cost. And I think that's relatively simpler for if you're looking at very specific technical class, because in that way, you can, relatively speaking, the development process is quite homogeneous in that way. Okay, so what we know from academic research, so compare we look at some of the pros and cons of capitalizations. So evidence including things such as software development informations are relatively useful for forecasting future economic benefits. There are also evidence looking at that software development informations reduce information, capitalization informations reduce information asymmetry, which also helps firms to evidence on the expense regime, which relatively early evidence show that expense regimes reduce information content for, so make it less useful for investors. Now, there are also some evidence looking at the other side, which is what are some of the issues of allowing capitalizations of R&Ds. For some countries, R&D capitalizations are not value relevant. So there are certain papers on that, and especially those countries that have low levels of institutional oversights. There are also experimental evidence suggesting that when you when managers can capitalize, then sometimes they prolong some, let's say, undervalue investments, so not very good investments, so they prolong that. So it makes it harder for them to actually give up some investments. There are also evidence separating capitalizers from expenses under a capitalization regime and find that capitalizers sometimes manipulate the capitalization decisions, capitalize more R&Ds. So that's what we know. So what we want to do is to look at these evidence and then consider whether there is a real benefit or there's a real cost to software development firms when the introduction of SFAS 86. Now, when we look at innovation, it's slightly different from financial measures. Innovations look at scientific value of the firm that has been created. Now, these are valuable for sure for company, and that's probably why intangible assets becomes more important for company over time, because they need to innovate to be competitive. But on the other side, when you look at patents, innovations, it also have sort of a close link to social benefits because it can also advance technical. So from our perspective, we want to look at this because we feel that We talk a little bit more, we do talk a lot about the financial benefit of accounting standards, but the question is, when you actually look at that from a society benefit point of view, then the question is, we're looking at this. Now, we're looking at a few innovation characteristics that we can measure. So the first category is the quantity of innovations. So we look at the number of patents that apply by a company over a period, of mostly looking at 1 year period. So the total patent count is the number of patents that the company applied. And then we look at total citations of those patents. Total citation is the total number of citations that patent received that was applied within a year. And the second category is patent quality and or innovation quality. We look at average citations. So for all the patents that have been applied within a course of time, what's the average citation? How often they've been cited on average? So that's a measure of quality of patents and the technology, the underlying technologies. We also look at two patent characteristics. One is generality, and the other one is originality. So generality is how widely a patent has been cited by different class of patents. So that basically captures the basicness of the underlying technology, because the more basic the technology, the more likely that it has wider applications and being cited by wider class of patents. Patent generality, originality is how widely do one patent, the patent actually cite other class of patents. So some And we the last items in the quality is we're looking at the economic value or the market value of the patent, which is really a measure based on the market reaction to announcement of a patent successful granted. The third category is innovation strategies. So mainly two particular ones. One is exploratory that actually cites a lot of prior patents. Do we find out whether the company know much about those patents? History of citing of patents. So if the patent had been cited before, then it's a known knowledge to the company. If the patent hasn't been cited before, then it's an unknown knowledge. So explorative patents are patents that actually cite many unknown knowledge. So the company are not yet use those knowledge before. And exploitative, mainly known knowledge. So the company already know those knowledge, they have used those knowledge before. So those the two are. So you can see that exploitative patents are usually the one that's more risky and possibly have more potential for the firm because they expand the company's knowledge set. Just look at how many class of patent that the company is actually innovating. So we consider a price study and look at some of the that price study have put forward and some of the evidence that we consider three potential effects of SFS 86. The first one is to the extent that 86 is reducing information asymmetry, but also produce a lower cost of capital for those firms that capitalize R&Ds, then have a choice to capitalize R&Ds, then they could have greater access to funding to fund more patent and innovations. So that will increase the quantity of the patent, But we are not quite sure about the quality of the patent, because most likely company will find the most, let's say, innovative project first. While they have more money, then they found the less innovative projects. So the quality of the patent could suffer on average. And the last one is when the company has more, let's say, rooms to fund the project, then they can actually fund more long-term project, which is explorative based. So they have more rooms to explore unknown knowledge. So those are the sort of prediction from this particular type of theories. Now, the next theory is really about agency problems. So this company earnings targets. So when the companies are pressurized to hit earnings target, it's more likely they focus on the short-term performance than the long-term. And there are ample evidence that company will forego expense item like R&D, discretionary expense item like R&D, in order to make in order to meet certain targets of. So if requiring the capitalization of R&Ds or software development reduce that sort of pressure, then there is a particular argument that it gives managers greater or less incentive to focus on the short term, but more incentive to focus on the long term, which leads to better innovation outcome. So that should lead to better innovation output, more explorative patents. Now, on the other hand, if requiring capitalization of software actually gave manager opportunities to exploit that sort of decisions, then there is a possibility that reduce the quality of the innovations, because they will focus more on gaining the, let's say, the gains. But on the other hand, they may not be actually doing anything to improve their innovations. So that's that. Now, the third part is actually, which is a learning effect. The question is, does accounting helps people to learn or help managers to learn? And this particular argument is that accounting requirement sometimes provide information or require company to do things systematically so that they can better evaluate some of their projects. So that's the argument in here. So for example, if SFS 86 require companies to test technical feasibility and consider probability of economic benefit for all their innovation projects, then basically it actually helps manager to better learn individual projects prospect. And that could actually affect the outcome of their investment. And that may lead to better innovation output, better quality, and also provide more rooms for evaluating unknown knowledge, whether they can actually use those. So the learning effect actually also can be seen here. So our research design is that we compare the change in innovation characteristic that I've discussed just now following the option 86 between software firm, and we compare that with other high-tech firms. So mainly we're looking at other high-tech public firms. So the treatment group in this particular case is that identify software firms, and we use this paper, Ho and Mac, which provide a list of software companies that they identify, and there's about 130 of them in total. Of course, the sample selections will reduce that a little bit. The control groups are other high-tech firms. We use a matching technique to match them based on some financial characteristics. And we also consider alternative control group, which is software private firm. Now, in the US, private firm does not necessarily need to prepare financial report based on the standard, but they can choose to be. So therefore, we use that as an alternative control sample rather than the main samples. And the other thing is that private firm, we don't have a lot of data on that. So what we are looking at is we split the timeline into two parts. One is the pre-adoption time, which is from 81 to 85. And 1986 is the time that the standard has been adopted. So we dropped that particular year for two reasons. One is a transitional year. The other one is that innovation sometimes takes time. So having 1 year gap sometimes allows the innovation, in fact, to materialize in this case. So and then adoption period, 87 to 1991. So 5 years on both sides. And we basically looking at the change in the innovation characteristic between two group of firms. So we create two variables. One is post. Post is really capturing the change because that basically is a time difference. So any times after 86 is considered as one in post, and times or year before 86 is considered as time zero. Okay, post equal to zero. And then we have treats. One group of firm is affected by the standard. The other group of firm is not affected theoretically by the standards. And the treatment group is the software firm, and the control group is other firms. So we basically use a difference in difference design in this case. So most of them are standard. Patent citation data come from NBER's database. Now that database ended in 1999 with all the citation data. So our citation finished in 1999. But that is like 10 years after the last year of our sample. So we feel that that sufficiently captures enough citation data. So data on economic value come from Kogan et al. 2017. So they calculate the market reactions to all their patent announcement of granting of the patents, and then calculate a total economic value for those patents. And software classification has been provided, and all the other data are from standard source. So to be included in the sample, we require non-missing total assets, and we require firms to have at least one patent application during the pre-period. So observation is also not from 86. So this is the full sample. So you can see that the treatment firm has more patents than the control group. But on the other hand, when we match them, the difference reduced significantly. So the main result is, compared with public high-tech firms, public software firm patent citations increase. The average citations, generality and originality also increase based on the outcome, the results. We do find monetary value to decrease, but because that particular measure is based on the announcement effect of the patent granting, so it is possible that with better information environment in terms of the capitalization decisions, then the company market maybe have already anticipated some of those effects. Explorative patents also increase, and the portfolio diversity also increase. So that's our main results. Public versus private entity, we find very similar result as a robustness check. Now, we did not find that other type of firm characteristics, such as capital investment, has changed. So the effect is mainly confined to patent-related measures. And we also find there's no differences in terms of the pre-trend between the two groups. Now, we conduct a few cross-sectional study to look at what kind of firm is mostly affected. So what we find is financially constrained firm, which we expect to be mostly affected because of the channels of better funding source. So that's actually this one. If the pressure to meet performance targets is that the effect is actually organization decision may be helping them to meet certain effect. So therefore, these kind of firms are not that benefited based on that. we find that this particular creating those pressures a little bit more, find that the SFS 86 is actually on firm that have more analysts following. So the contribution of intangibles to focus on the impact of accounting standards on specific scientific value that are created by the companies. And that should have a wider social implication because people can cite those technology and develop those technology. Quite SFS 38 and SFAS 86 may have a real impact on patent development. So that of what we find, and there could be a generalization issues because there are some differences between two standards, and we do suggest that a standard setter may consider expanding their cost benefit analysis to considering scientific technologies that economies, then we probably need to consider something beyond financials. And that could, I mean, it's a little bit like sustainability report that we consider sustainability measures rather than, yeah. So a bit of, so the results suggest that adoption of SFS 86 actually improve a lot of measures of innovations, corporate innovations. There are some endogeneity for us because we only have one event in here, and the separation of the treatment and control group sometimes are not that clear cut. There could be a lot of issues happening during that period. And also the period is a little bit old, it's about 30, 40 years ago. So we're not sure whether this could be applicable in the present times. And also SFAS 86 is very specific about one class of innovations. So changing a more general R&D standards could actually have different impact. So that's another able to test the learning effect. So if you guys have. Thank you very much.
Right. Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Hai, for the presentation. And thank you, Araceli, Catherine, and Michelle, for inviting me to be discussant of this paper. And as Anne says, I had the privilege to be here in the here in Oxford in the first event. So it's nice to be part of this event in general. I will crack on with my comments straight away. Another very important reason for me to be happy to discuss this paper is that we have done, for those who know me, work on R&D under IFRSs, and we have done also some work with software development costs a couple of years ago, but I haven't worked with US data on the subject, so it was also a learning experience for me. I hope I get the points correct. If I don't, please, hi, correct me, or those who are more familiar, please correct me. The paper is looking at the real effect of accounting for software and development costs, and as Hai described, the setting, we are back in the 90s when the standard implemented in the middle of 80s, and introduced mandatory capitalization of software development costs subject to some conditions, right? From one point of view, we could say this is the same idea as the criteria that IAS 38 has, but has different criteria, right? Or lower number. They apply a difference in difference approach and a PSM technique. And they test four hypotheses. Now, the third one is with two parts. In terms of writing, I have to say that I enjoyed the paper, that it is clear on what is discussed in there. So that's a good, what you have is clear, but there are some parts that are not there. So I would, some of the comments relate to provide more explanations on some aspects, okay? And when it comes to the hypotheses, hypothesis one and hypothesis three and A and B seem quite consistent when it comes to the writing up. But then you also touched on it during your presentation. When it comes to hypothesis two, which is about innovation quality of software firms and whether that improves in the post period, things are not very clear there because, as you said, there may be two directions, right? But I wasn't clear about these directions. You say if we have reduction of information asymmetry and reduction in cost of capital, that will incentivize firms to spend more on R&D and their software development, and then they will come with higher quality. But then you said this may result lower quality because of producing so many patents that actually may not bring so much economic benefit. Although the argument seems okay, I think you need to substantiate that with some evidence from empirical literature, whether this is the case, whether you know the standard has or there is an association with lower cost of capital or future economic benefits of software development costs, because you don't cite that there, okay? Now, in terms of findings, as you summarized, the quantity seems to increase significantly in the post period. The scientific value also increases, and then companies tend to focus more on exploration, right? And diversity in their innovation portfolio. Now I will come to the difficult part for me, that my role is to provide some comments for improvements, right? So I have all the good intentions here. Sorry if I sound a little bit critical, right? So that is a quote from the paper about the contribution of the study. Within that, you have also some other papers that looking at Australian data or Anne's paper with French data, which look at value relevance of R&D in general. And I'm not sure yet that you really contribute to that literature. I would propose you focus on this particular literature in the US, looking at software development costs and the adoption, the implementation of the standard. And then in terms of contribution, really, you do respond to that call from Lloyds and Wysocki in looking at real effects, okay? So I find this part of the paper very good. It is an interesting idea. It is an interesting topic to explore. And then you also mentioned in the introduction that there are these two closely related papers. The first one is in Abacus from Dean et al., and the other one is a PhD thesis, if I remember well, which is good that you cited and you acknowledge that. And they are looking specifically in the adoption of the standard again, and they are looking about investment efficiency of development costs and over or under investments. So again, you differentiate from these studies by looking at the patents, the output, not, you know, the how much they spend and whether they overinvest or not. So I find that a good aspect. But I think there is an issue that is missing from your study. I'm not sure how you could address that. I give you some suggestions later on. But all these papers here, even the old ones, they do bring in some data with the amounts of software cost capitalized, which you don't have in the paper. So you find an effect that in the post period, you know, there are better quality patents and so on. But do we know really that it is because firms capitalize or capitalize sufficient amounts and so on? You don't have that in your data, in your tests, okay? So I think that's something to be added there. Now, in terms of policy implications, yes, I know we are in the IASB, at the IASB forum, and obviously the first, if you wish, interested party would be the IASB here, but we also have the FASB around, right? So I'm thinking, in the paper, you don't discuss about the FASB. So one of the points in the slide is, what about the FASB, right? In terms of the IFRS is, and it was interesting you touched on that during your presentation at the end. What is really your proposal? You don't mention that in the paper. Do you suggest the IASB to focus on an industry-specific standard, which is like that one? If you do say it, I'm not sure that will go down well, in the sense that we know the approach that the IFRS Foundation has, or the ISB has over the years, not to have industry-specific standards. So I'm not sure what you can say there. What I found, and indeed a valid suggestion there, was that the standard here has only two criteria and provides clear guidance on how a company could justify whether the criteria are met. And we know from study we have conducted, and Francesco is here as well, we have talk to investors, and one of the problems they find with IAS 38 is that the criteria are a little bit vague and the standard doesn't have enough guidance, okay? So perhaps there is a learning, something to be learned from that standard for the ISB, and you touched on that, right? And then the final point about the FASB. Now, in terms of your research design, okay, I think there are a few issues you need to address, in the sense you talked about your control group, but you do not provide the SIC codes. Which are these firms as your control group? And as an example here, I'm giving you the paragraph from MOD, which is the key paper in the literature on software development cost. They cite Christine's paper there on the different industries that they use as control groups, right? How many minutes do I have? No way, right? And Dean et al. Do the same, right? Now, in terms of your model, please allow me a couple of minutes, okay? In the dependent variable, your quantity includes citations. Your second proxy for quantity is citations, and then you use citations as a measure of quality as well. The previous literature uses only, the number of patents, doesn't use the citations as a quantity measure. So I think you need to justify that. Then there are a couple of things you perhaps need to consider from the papers you cite, weighting the number of patents, and then whether there is, enough time lag for the applications. Now, the other thing is, I mentioned this issue about the capitalization, right? And then something you also mentioned earlier when you presented, that there is a time lag between the timing of spending for the R&D and when the effect is coming. So perhaps you need to consider changing that to lag R&D rather than R&D at time T. And then a minor issue to provide the CompuStat items. Now, another issue in the design, when you do the PSM, you say which variables you use. You don't use R&D expenditure for matching the firms. And I thought, given the setting that you are having, this would be a key issue to consider, right? Then in terms of your model, I note that you use firm fixed effects here. And for that reason, you don't use the post and the treat variables independently. However, the standard practice in the literature is to have these and then introduce industry fixed effects. And that's why the previous point about the industry for the control group is very important there. Okay. And that may have implications for your findings, because if you add these two variables there, I'm not sure, the findings, whether they hold. 1 minute, I'm done. Sorry. And I'm saying that because that's a summary, an extract from the findings there. And you will see that some of the findings are not really strong, right? So I'm a bit concerned if you change the model, you may lose power. So you see quite a few are at the 10%. And then when you consider, the count, sometimes is not significant. Final slide. You see here when you do these additional tests, here the treat and post variable is not significant at all, doesn't have a significant coefficient. Is that a problem? How do you interpret that? And then that's a persistent finding there, that it's only the sites that turns to have significant coefficient, not the count. Whereas when you do with the earnings management benchmark, then, the treat and post variable is significant, right? And on this, on the earnings management, that's my final comment, you are using, because you don't have data about capitalizing or not, which is the standard method for benchmarking on earnings, right? Beating earnings. You use difference from last year. But if we don't know whether firms capitalize, and in fact, the previous papers say that not all software development firms capitalize, right? So then how do we know these differences because of capitalization of development costs? So overall, I agree with the idea. I like the idea that you want to test the output. It is an interesting paper, but I think there is scope for improvement there. And subject to that, there is good potential for the paper. Good luck. Okay. Thank you very much.
So next time you tell us our standards are too long and wordy, you know, we'll come back on that one.
Nope. How do I do it? Full screen?
Okay. So I'll try to make up time. Let's see. No. Okay. So thank you very much. I really liked the paper. I think it was a very straightforward story there. I guess somebody hasn't paid their license here. So thanks again for that. You know. So these are the stylized facts of the study, right? Projects are technically feasible. You go through information asymmetry, low cost. We'll come back to that. They show us the beginning and they show us the end. They don't really show us details on the channels. They have these, if you will, that sort of purport to up here. As standard setters, we could clap ourselves on the back, congratulate ourselves. It's not our step. It's all cap, right? I mean, IAS 9, which you did not mention, allowed capitalization in 1978. So we were there before you guys, right? Okay. Let me drink coffee for 10 minutes. So let's go on. If we accept these facts, what can we learn as standard setters? I think there are two things. One is, and this is the story the authors tell us, the differentiation between what is technically feasible and which is just research provides us incremental information over just expensing. The analogy here, and this is my personal opinion, not the board's opinion, is that I think in goodwill accounting, we have a lot of the same issues, right? I think an annual impairment test is more valuable in terms of information quality than just straight expensing, which has no content. The cost with future revenues. Capitalization aligns it with future revenues. We have more information about the underlying economic profitability. Right, obvious. That's the reason why we capitalize CapEx. Because it creates future benefits. Talk about later here. Look at these. I talk a lot about information provision. And this is where we step back, we have to think about, as then, what is our target function? What is it that we try to achieve with our standards? And this is from our conceptual framework, paragraph 1.2, which basically says we want to provide useful information for investors. And there's more to it around, but that's generally the idea. So as standard setters, when we read our conceptual framework, we do not necessarily care that much about social benefits, to be honest. But this is, I mean, I think as individuals, we do. I think, you know, it's something that we care, but it's not in our objective function in all cases. And you see that actually playing out in the sustainability standards discussion in real life. Our objective function. Now, if we as standard setters take that as what we're trying to achieve and apply that to the paper, then it becomes a little bit more difficult. Because then two, one was already mentioned by the first discussant, on the left hand side, is users assign you is the excess return on patent announcement system throughout all their tests. So whatever the social benefits are, so that's a problem. Second one is, what we find is that R&D expenses actually increase and R&D costs increase even more. Right, so these are, tell us the R&D expenses go up from 6% to 7% of total assets, but on so the and so therefore it's no surprise that we get more patents because than before. Right, so the outcome isn't really that surprising to us. So if you think, so if we take that, allow me to present a different hypothesis of what is happening, a different channel. How about this? Companies really try to keep their margins stable because now they can capitalize it. They just spend more, right, and their profit. Now, using for more than 20 years, so, you know, I've met marginal investor isn't stupid, and that's the one that is relevant, not the average, but the marginal investor isn't stupid. The users figure that one out. They know that whatever you capitalize eventually will come back on the P&L through amortization. And that is why users think these guys are overspending. And this is why they think the incremental is also a comment addressed by the discussant is the earnings constraint from which are really just slow growing firms, you know, in the setup the author. Over which to spend their R&D costs. So of course they would be impacted more because the amortization coming back would be a bigger part of their revenues in terms of. Easily done. Now, in a stable environment, the amounts should be about the same, right? In a state. Line. Right? But the. Well, they really need to look at the amortization. And I think you guys need to extend your sample out into sort of the steady state data. What they give you is that what we see, we don't have our, the authors don't give us a time series of R&D expenses. They give us a time period of citations and patents. And that drops down in 91 at the last period. But then 91, 92, double dip recession in the US, you know, savings and loan crisis. That was a special year, right? So, I mean, I'll give you that. So it's hard to draw much conclusions from that. But I think you need to really think about what. From a standard set of perspective, isn't a bad thing. Because it basically tells us provided by the standard was sufficient enough that users could figure it out. Instead of affairs for us as standard setters, we're happy with that. You really, I think, need to look at amortization, capitalization. CompuSat, it's not. Second suggestion is, I mean, as standard setters, we have three tools. We have recognition, we have measurement, and we have disclosures. And I think the disclosure part of the FASB standard here helped users to figure it out. There wasn't much disclosure, to be honest. But anyway, it's gotten better since then. But, you know, we've had 30 years or so. The other thing you may want to look at is you only look at, does management have the option to capitalize? That is the question you're asking. Does management have the option to capitalize? The question is, does the proportion of capitalization make a difference? Right? Maybe that's a different paper, I accept that. Right? But that would be interesting. Not only do they have it, but how much do they capitalize, and does that make a difference across companies? And I think with your hypothesis around diversified patents, you know, we would expect something like a reverse U-shaped type of outcome.